Okay, so this guy, he is the image that Nebuchadnezzar dreamed about in Daniel chapter 2. So this image is the dream of a Gentile king. In fact, it's the first Gentile king that God put his blessing on in what's called the times of the Gentiles. So let's define what he is. He's got a head of gold. He's got a shoulder and trunk of silver, belly and thighs of bronze, legs of iron, and feet of iron and clay. Yeah, there's a mixture down there at the bottom. It's very clearly stated in Daniel chapter 2 that the head is Babylon. The next kingdom to come along is Medo-Persia. The next kingdom after that is Greece. The next kingdom after that is Rome. And Rome really continues on. And we call it Revived Rome because from our perspective, Rome ended in about 400 AD. I'm going to do all this on a timeline rather than on a standing statue, kind of lay that down for you. But really, actually, from Daniel's perspective, Rome never ended. The world does not see this. They don't understand this. Now, I'm going to start a slide that's going to get rather complicated. And we're going to read something here. We're going to read a couple chapters. We're going to look at Daniel chapter 2. I'm going to read that. So Daniel chapter 2, verse 31. Now, this is Daniel, a young man, interpreting this Gentile king's dream. He says, "You, king, were looking, and behold, there was a single great statue. And that statue, which was large and of extraordinary splendor, was standing in front of you, and its appearance was awesome. And the head of that statue was made of fine gold, and its breast and its arms were of silver, and its belly and its thighs of bronze, and its legs were of iron, its feet partly of iron and partly of clay. And you continued looking until a stone was cut out without hands, and it struck the statue on its feet of iron and clay and crushed them. Then the iron, the clay, the bronze, the silver, and the gold were crushed all at the same time and became like chaff from the summer threshing floors, and the wind carried them away so that not a trace of them was found. But the stone that struck the statue became a great mountain and filled the whole earth." The statue is replaced by the stone. The statue is replaced by the stone. Again, this is God giving his perspective to a Gentile king. Later, Daniel's going to get a vision from God from the perspective of the Jewish people. And you find out there that these nations that are represented here are not completely gone. But that comes later. So we're going to look at both sides of this here today. But what the emphasis here is that this great statue, as awesome and as filled with splendor as it is going to be replaced by this stone that's cut out of a mountain without hands. So it's without any human intervention. "This was the dream. Now we shall tell its interpretation before the king. You, O king, are the king of kings, to whom the God of heaven has given the kingdom, the power, the strength, and the glory, and wherever the sons of men dwell, or the beasts of the field, or the birds of the sky, he has given them over into your hand, and has caused you to rule over them all. You are the head of gold." Now, that is a literal, historical, political interpretation of that statue. You are the head of gold. You, Babylon, are the head of gold. And that's referring directly to Nebuchadnezzar. And his kingdom of the head of gold, and he is the head of the kingdom right now, at this time. Verse 39, he starts going pretty fast. He says, "After you, another will arise, another kingdom inferior to you." Well, it's Medo-Persia. "Then another third kingdom of bronze, which will rule over all the earth." That's Greece. So in two verses, he just eliminates the next two kingdoms. Here's the one he's going to focus on. Verse 40. "There will be a fourth kingdom as strong as iron, inasmuch as iron crushes and shatters all things. So like iron that breaks in pieces, it will crush and break all these in pieces." These kingdoms are broken up and parceled out into pieces. "And as you saw the feet and the toes, partly of potter's clay and partly of iron, it will be a divided kingdom. But it will have in it the toughness of iron, inasmuch as you saw iron mixed with common clay. And as the toes of the feet were partly of iron and partly of pottery, so some of the kingdom will be strong," that would be the iron, "and part of it will be brittle," that would be the pottery, the clay. Verse 43, "And in that you saw the iron mixed with common clay, they will combine with one another in the seed of men, but they will not adhere to one another, even as iron does not combine with pottery." You can get it to mix together, but it won't meld together. Verse 44, "And in the days of those kings," what kings? The ten toes he just referred to. "In the days of those kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom which will never be destroyed." Stone, that he talked about above. "And that kingdom will not be left for another people. It will crush and put an end to all these kingdoms. But it itself will endure." Again, the stone replaces the statue. Verse 45, inasmuch as you saw that a stone was cut out of the mountain without hands, and that it crushed the iron, the bronze, the clay, the silver, and the gold, the great God of heaven has made known to the king what will take place in the future. So the dream is true, and the interpretation is trustworthy. The dream is real truth. The interpretation of the dream is actually true. He's talking about political kingdoms. Four political kingdoms replaced by a kingdom that comes out of the mountain made without hands, which is also a political kingdom. It's not an allegorical fairy tale. It's an actual political kingdom. So if you take this through and follow it through and are consistent in your interpretation, you come up with the kingdom of the stone is just as real as the kingdom of Babylon. It's going to exist on this earth. Why do I stress that? Because 80% of Christianity and 80% of the kids coming out of seminaries do not believe that's true. The way they interpret shifts from literal on some passages to allegorical when it comes to what they call apocalyptic literature. So let's look at this on a very busy slide. The head is Babylon. This all starts in 606 BC. This is the beginning of the times of the Gentiles. And we are still in the times of the Gentiles. The Jewish people have not been brought back and established in their land as the kingdom that God prophesied from the book of Genesis on. Babylon is replaced by Medo-Persia. That's the shoulders, silver. That's replaced by Greece, the belly, which is bronze. That runs into the Roman Empire, which is the legs, which are of iron, which run into the feet, which are iron and clay. And that's Rome. Some of the elements of Babylon were carried over into Medo-Persia. Some of the elements of Medo-Persia carried over into Babylon. The Greek culture had a great influence on the Roman culture. And of course, the Roman culture and the Greek culture have a great influence on even our culture. So there's this flow of history where things are kind of blended together. This is a continuous statue. And from Daniel's perspective, he didn't see a break in this flow of history from head to 10 toes. Daniel did not see an end of the Roman Empire until the stone comes out of heaven and hits the statue at the feet. So you think of it from his perspective. It's hard to do because we want to look back historically and say, well, we know things that happened that he wasn't familiar with. But what do we have? We have this timeline that goes from 606 to 400 AD historically for us, because that's when we say the Roman Empire ended, about 400 to 475. That's the only date I'm going to give you. We don't know when these 10 kings, as he talked about, are going to come about. We don't know when that's going to happen. And that's followed by this stone, which is the kingdom. Establishment of a kingdom which replaces all world kingdoms. And what Daniel sees is Rome continuing on until that kingdom is established. And that really is what the Bible's teaching. Rome doesn't die. It just kind of disappears for a while. And it's going to pop back up as a revived Roman Empire. The other chapter that's a parallel to this, look at Daniel chapter 7. These four kingdoms are going to be described in a different way. 7:1, in the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Belshazzar is Nebuchadnezzar's grandson. Daniel saw a dream and visions in his mind as he lay on his bed. Then he wrote the dream down and related the following summary of it. Now what? Chapter 2, the Gentile king had a dream. Daniel's about 16, he interprets it. Here, Daniel's about 65, Daniel has the dream. Daniel's going to have a dream from the Jewish perspective. Daniel said, I was looking in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of heaven were stirring up the great sea. That's the Mediterranean Sea. And four great beasts were coming up from the sea, different from one another. The first was like a lion and had the wings of an eagle. I kept looking until its wings were plucked, and it was lifted up from the ground and made to stand on 2 feet like a man. A human mind was given to it. Now, that's a reference to Nebuchadnezzar. Verse 5, and behold, another beast, a second one resembling a bear. And it was raised up on one side. 3 ribs were in its mouth, between its teeth. And thus they said to it, arise and devour much meat. And after this I kept looking, behold, another one like a leopard, which had on its back 4 wings of a bird. The beast also had 4 heads, and dominion was given to it. This is Greece. And after this I kept looking in the night visions, and behold, a 4th beast, dreadful and terrifying and extremely strong. And it had large iron teeth. It devoured and crushed and trampled down the remainder with its feet. And it was different from all the beasts that were before it. And it had 10 horns. See how this coincides with chapter 2? You have 10 horns on this beast with teeth of iron who tramples down the other beast, as in chapter 2 said, the legs of iron, broken pieces, the other kingdoms. This beast has 10 horns, coincides to the 10 toes of the image. While I was contemplating the 10 horns, behold, another horn, now this would be an 11th horn, a little one, came up among them, and 3 of the first horns were pulled out by the roots before it, and behold, this horn possessed eyes like the eyes of a man and a mouth uttering great boasts. I kept looking until the thrones were set up, and the Ancient of Days took his seat. His vesture was like white snow, and the hair of his head like pure wool. His throne was ablaze with flames. His wheels were a burning fire. A river of fire was flowing and coming out from before him. Thousands upon thousands were attending him, and myriads upon myriads were standing before him. The court sat, and the books were opened. This is the throne of God. Then I kept looking because of the sound of the boastful words which the horn was speaking. So here this throne is being established, and this little horn has gotten larger, and he's boasting and bragging. He's self-exalting. I kept looking because of the sounds of the words with the boastful words which the horn was speaking, and I kept looking until the beast, his fourth beast, was slain, and its body was destroyed and given to the burning fire. As for the rest of the beasts, that would be the lion, the bear, and the leopard, their dominion was taken away, but an extension of time was granted to them for an appointed period of time. Now here's where you have some clarification of what he said in chapter 2, where these kingdoms are going to fall down and be like chaff and be blown away. Here you have a little clarification. They're going to lose their dominion. They're going to lose their power. They're going to lose their control of the world system. But they're still going to have a place in time. And we'll see that as we get into the book of Revelation. There will be nations of the world in existence when Israel does come to be the preeminent nation under God, under Jesus Christ. Verse 13. I kept looking in the night visions, and behold, with the clouds of heaven, one like a son of man was coming, and he came up to the Ancient of Days and was presented before him. Now this is the Ancient of Days up in verses 9 and 10. This throne, the throne of God the Father, one like a son of man comes and is presented before the throne of the Father. This is why Jesus called himself Son of Man, because he knew he was the one who came to fulfill this prophecy. Verse 14, and to him, to this Son of Man, was given dominion, glory, and a kingdom, so that all the peoples, nations, and men of every language might serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion which will not pass away, and his kingdom is one which will not be destroyed. Now, this is Jesus being the head of a political kingdom here on earth that's been given to him by his Father. And we find that's consistent throughout the whole Bible, that that's the view of Messiah. And we're not in this kingdom today. His kingdom will come. He will be king over this world because God has declared him to be king, and his kingdom is coming. Look at Daniel's response as he sees this in verse 15. As for me, Daniel, my spirit was distressed within me, and the visions of my mind kept alarming me. He felt great anxiety about what he saw because he saw this flow of history of what was going to happen to the Jewish people under these dominions of these beasts. God showed Nebuchadnezzar the kingdoms from the Gentiles' perspective. He sees this beautiful metal image. But when he shows Daniel these nations, he shows them as beasts who are cruel, oppressive, and who persecute the Jewish people. Various times they came to persecute and try to utterly destroy the Jewish people. Then verse 16, he says, I approached one of those who were standing by and began asking him the exact meaning of all this. I want to know the truth about what this means. So he told me and made known to me the interpretation of these things. These great beasts, which are four kings which will arise from the earth. But the saints of the highest one receive the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever, for all ages to come. Then I desired to know the exact meaning, the true meaning is what he's saying here. I want to know the real interpretation of the fourth beast. That's the one he's most concerned about. Look at how the angel dealt with the first three. These are kings that are going to arise and are over the earth. But Daniel says, I want to know about that last one. I think that's the one that frightened him the most. He was different from all the others, going on in verse 19. Exceedingly dreadful, with his teeth of iron, his claws of bronze, and which devoured, crushed, and trampled down the remainder with its feet, and the meaning of the 10 horns which were on its head, and the other horn which came up, and before which 3 of them fell, namely that horn which has eyes and a mouth uttering great boasts, which was larger in appearance than its associates. Look at how he rehearses the whole thing over again. He wants the angel that he's questioning to know, I want to know exactly what all these things mean. He says in verse 21, I kept looking, and that horn was waging war with the saints and overpowering them. Because these saints in the tribulation will be persecuted and overwhelmed by this beast. Verse 22, he was overpowering them until the Ancient of Days came, and the judgment was passed in favor of the saints of the Highest One, and the time arrived when the saints took possession of the kingdom. That's the same kingdom he talked about in chapter 2, the stone that came and crushed the image. So the stone in chapter 2 is this dominion of the Ancient of Days in chapter 7. Thus he said, the fourth beast will be a fourth kingdom in the earth, which will be different from all other kingdoms, and it will devour the whole earth and tread it down and crush it. As for the 10 horns, out of this kingdom 10 kings will arise. Out of the Roman Empire, 10 kings are going to come, all at once, all serving at the same time, not one after another. And another will arise after them. That's number 11. And he will be different from the previous ones and will subdue 3 kings. He will speak out against the Most High and wear down the saints of the Highest One. He will intend to make alterations in times and in law, and they will be given into his hand for a time, that's 1 times, that's 2.5 a time. That's how much? 3.5. He's talking about years here. We're going to look at other passages that make this crystal clear. How long is this little horn going to be allowed to rule? 3.5 years. He's limited in his rule. But the court will sit for judgment, and his dominion will be taken away, annihilated, and destroyed forever. Then the sovereignty, the dominion, and the greatness of all the kingdoms of the whole heaven will be given to the people of the saints of the Highest One. His kingdom will be an everlasting kingdom, and all dominions of the earth will serve and obey him. Who's the him? The Son of Man, back in verse 13, who comes up to the throne and everything's given back to him. That's the him that's being talked about there. At this point, the revelation ended. As for me, Daniel, my thoughts were greatly alarming me. My face grew pale, but I kept the matter to myself. Fear, as he looks ahead and sees what's going to happen. Daniel is given a revelation by God that is so horrifying that it just sickens him. So on a timeline, what's that look like? We have the lion that coincides with the head, Babylon. We have the bear that coincides with Medo-Persia, the shoulders. We have a leopard that's got 4 wings. Greece was ruled by Alexander the Great, who died at the age of 33 and left his kingdom to 4 rulers. They divided his kingdom up into 4 parts, and that became the history of the Greek Empire. The next one is Rome. It's a terrifying beast, and this terrifying beast has 10 horns. So Daniel says there's a beast I can't even name. It's just got legs like iron. Out of that kingdom will come 10 kings who are all going to rule at once. And this is in the time of the feet, because these 10 kings coincide with the 10 toes. And out of those 10 kings is going to come a little horn who's going to get bigger and bigger and bigger and actually dominate and overtake. He's going to do away with 3 of these kings, and he's going to oppose God himself. That's what Daniel 7 tells us. And he's limited to 3.5 years, and that's where you get that yellow line, because that yellow line divides that period in half. That tells us that this little horn is only going to operate for 3.5 years. We don't know when that's going to happen. And then it says the Ancient of Days comes, sets up the throne, opens the book, and judges this little horn, does away with this king, and Jesus Christ establishes his kingdom. What God gave Daniel was a timeline for human history, and he's called it the times of the Gentiles. That's what Jesus called this. Times when the Gentiles would rule over the land that God had promised to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. This is the foundation for Revelation 13. I'm just going to read this. I'm going to read 10 verses from Revelation 13. Start there. Revelation 13, verse 1. He stood on the sand of the seashore, and I saw a beast coming up out of the sea, having 10 horns and 7 heads, and on his horns were 10 crowns, and on his heads were blasphemous names. And the beast which I saw was like a leopard, and his feet were like those of a bear, and his mouth was like the mouth of a lion. And the dragon gave him his power and his throne and great authority. And I saw one of his heads as if it had been slain, and his fatal wound was healed. And the whole earth was amazed and followed after the beast. And they worshipped the dragon. Satan, that's right. They worshipped the dragon because he gave his authority to the beast. So this is a Satan-energized human being. They worshipped the beast, saying, who is like the beast? Who is able to wage war with him? And there was given to him a mouth, speaking arrogant words and blasphemies, and authority to act for 42 months, 3.5 years. This coincides with what we just saw in Daniel 7, doesn't it? This beast blaspheming, boasting, self-aggrandizing, and he's limited to 42 months, 3.5 years. A time, times, and half a time. Verse 6, he opened his mouth in blasphemies against God to blaspheme his name and his tabernacle and those who dwell in heaven. And it was given to him to make war with the saints and to overcome them. Just exactly what Daniel chapter 7 said. And authority over every tribe and people and tongue and nation was given to him. And all who dwell on the earth will worship him. Everyone whose name, not everyone, but everyone whose name has not been written from the foundation of the world in the book of life of the Lamb who has been slain. So there are a group of people who God has already set aside who will not worship this beast. And we're going to stop there. But do you see how the foundation for what is said in Revelation 13 is built right into Daniel chapter 7? Is the emphasis on the details of Daniel chapter 7? It's on this final horn, this final beast. And when we come to Revelation 13, what's the focus and what's the emphasis? On that final beast, that final horn. Okay, we're going to stop there, and next week we're going to pick this up again and go back to Daniel chapter 9 because we want to lay the further foundation for what's called Daniel and the 70 weeks, which gives a little clearer picture of where we are in terms of prophetic events.